ಸ್ಯಾದಂ ಕುರುವನ್ಗೀತಾಮೃತಂ ಲೋಕತ್ರಯೋಪಕಾರಾಯ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾತ್ಮನೇ ನಮಃ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ. ವೆಲ್ಕಮ್ ಟು ಭಗವದ್ಗೀತಾ ಭಕ್ತಿಶಾಸ್ತ್ರಿ ಕೋರ್ಸ್. ವಿ ಆರ್ ನೌ ಇನ್ ದ ಲಾಸ್ಟ್ ಪಾರ್ಟ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ಫಿಫ್ತ್ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್. ವಿ ಆರ್ ಡಿಸ್ಕಸ್ಡ್ 5.24. So in this last section, Krishna is telling that how a yogi can attain liberation by fixing the mind on Supreme Lord. And the crux of this discussion is the redirection of our pleasure-seeking propensity from matter to spirit, from outwards to inwards. So 5.20 said that a person who is equipoised amidst pleasure and pain comes to a spiritual platform. 5.21 says, for that one should be detached from external pleasures and then one can attain unlimited spiritual happiness. 5.22 said that what is the basis for detaching oneself from external pleasures? Understanding that they are wombs of misery. They are temporary and they will end in misery. And 5.23 said that, yes, still the desires may come, but one should tolerate them. And then 5.24 said that, we turn inwards and delight inwards. Then we will attain the Brahman platform. So 5.20 and 24 are like this parts of a cycle. So what 5.20 talks about, Brahma with Brahmani Sthitaha, that's what 5.24 also returns to. That a person attains Brahma Nirvana. So now Krishna will continue that and talk about attaining Brahma Nirvana, attaining the spiritual platform. Let's look at the verse. Labhante Brahma Nirvanam Rishaya Kshina Kalmashaha Chinnadvaidhaya Tatmana Sarvabhuta Hiteerataha. So Labhante means one attains. Brahma Nirvanam. Brahma Nirvanam is the spiritual platform. We discussed this yesterday. Who attains it? Labhante is to attain, to gain. Rishaya. Rishaya is, now the word Rishi is used, we have Narad Rishi or Vyasa Rishi. We use the word Rishi, Muni. Each of them have their specific meanings. But generally the word Rishi means one who turns inwards. That's the context of the previous verse also. The previous verse said that Rishayaha, those who have turned inwards. Yantah Sukhantara Ramas. The previous verse is talking about turning inwards. So when this word is used in that context, it will continue to mean that. One who turns inwards. Prabhupada writes, those who are active within. What happens to such people? Kshina kalmashaha. So kalmashaha is contamination of the heart. These will be destroyed. Now Krishna has talked to use the same word in 5.17 in the D part. Jnana nirdhuta kalmashaha. Jnana nirdhuta. So by knowledge, the person has become freed from all contaminations. Tat buddhaya sadatmanas tannishas tat parayanaha kachantya punaravrittim jnana nirdhuta kalmashaha. So jnana nirdhuta, one will become free from all sins by all contaminations by the power of jnana that is acquired by investing one's mind, one's intelligence, one's faith and one's aspiration. So now here Krishna is saying the same point, that the person who attains Brahma Nirvana has to be Rishaya Kshina Kalmashaha. And for becoming Kshina Kalmashaha, Chinna Dvaidha. Dvaidha is duality. Dva, Dva, Dvandva, Dvaidha. They are all related words, which basically means duality. This is good, this is bad. Chinna Dvaidha, one cuts through that. And the person is Yatatmanaha. Yatatmanaha means Yatatmanaha. So, one who is, in Prabhupada translates that as, one who is engaged in self-realization. Yata atmana. Yata can mean controlled, renounced. So one who is controlled at the level of soul, one who is focused on realizing the soul. Sarvabhuta hiteratha. This is a significant point. Sarvabhuta hiteratha means such a person is engaged in the well-being of all. Now, what is the connection of this with the overall theme of the verse? Many people feel that those who pursue spiritual realization, they are very self-centered. They don't bother about the world. They are simply concerned about their own purification, their own liberation. And they don't care for others. Krishna says that is not the case. He says that those who are striving, those who are the people who will attain self-realization, those who are sarvabhuta hiterataha. Those who are engaged in the welfare of all living beings. Now Krishna will use the same describer, Sarvabhuta Hiterataha, once again in the 12th chapter, when he is describing the impersonalists. So he says, in 12.34 and 5, he talks about impersonalists. And then he says, Anyetvaksharam nirdesham avyaktam paryupasate sarvatrama chintyamcha kutastham achalam dhruham sanyamendriya gramam vinyamya samantataha te prapnuvanti mameva sarvabhuta hiterataha. So there also uses the word sarvabhuta hiterataha. So he says those impersonalists have to be engaged in the well-being of all, and they have to contemplate on the all-pervading, qualityless, formless, activityless Brahman. And eventually they will also attain Krishna. But next verse is a very difficult process. Klesho diktarastesha, 12.5. So is it that the impersonalists alone are well-wishers of all living beings? No, the point is even the impersonalists have to be well-wishers, have to be benefactors for all living beings. What about what to speak of devotees? Krishna will talk about devotees in the same chapter later, in 12.13, when he says the devotees are the well-wishing friends of all living beings. Adveshta sarvabhutana maitraha karuna evacha. So there he will explain that my devotees are non-envious towards all living beings. Not only are they non-envious, they are maitraha karuna. They are actually the well-wishing friends of all living beings. Maitraha karuna evacha. So why are they the friends? Because they see that all living beings are the parts of Krishna, they are the children of Krishna, and we are all one family. So how can our beloved Lord be happy if his other parts and parcels are suffering? So we have to do what we can to help them also come back home. The impersonalists, on the other hand, their compassion is not so personal based, because their ultimate reality is not personal. So then even their emotions can also not be personal. So the sarvabhuta hiterataha for them is more that they should not discriminate among various living beings. That means whoever be the living beings, they should be able to have an attitude of compassion towards them. They should have an attitude of, they should not discriminate. Oh, this person is, I like this person, I don't like this person. They should have samya. They should have equal vision towards everyone, and equally they should be having a benevolent attitude towards everyone. So the point is, both kinds of spiritualists, whether they are personalists or impersonalists, they are expected to engage in the welfare of all living beings. Now, what is the welfare that they should engage in? That is indicated by the qualifications that these people should have in this verse. They are rishaya kshina kalmashaha chinna dvaidhayata atmana. They are kshina kalmashaha. They are freed from impurities. See, unless people are freed from impurities, they cannot engage truly in the welfare of everyone. Why? Because when they want to engage in the welfare, do welfare for everyone, they should know how to do welfare. If now at one level, doing welfare seems very simple. A person is starving, give some food. A person doesn't have clothes, give some clothes. Yes, these are noble, these are compassionate. But the problems plaguing society are not so simple. Why are those people hungry or bereaved? That's because there is a whole socio-economic complex that is governed by greed and exploitation on one side among the haves, and that is fueled by the wantonness of everyone, including the have-nots. Even the have-nots don't have self-restraint. Many times when we give beggars some money, they use it for smoking instead of eating. So instead of taking food, they smoke or drink. So we have discussed this elaborately in our Manasya Madhasya topic. The point is that helping also requires some level of understanding of what is real help. So the greed and the wantonness means the unrestricted, unregulated indulgence in pleasures, even self-defeating, self-destructive pleasures. That is wantonness, and that has to be curbed. So how is that to be dealt with? That is to be dealt with by the practice of by the attainment of higher spiritual happiness. Unless a person experiences higher spiritual happiness, the person cannot give up lower happiness. If the person doesn't give up lower happiness, then the person cannot actually do good to others, because the exploitative mentality will come up sooner or later. And even if there is no exploitative mentality, even if there is actually compassionate mentality, still, if we don't know, know, a person may want to help a sick person, but if the person doesn't know how to treat the sick person, how much help can be done? So people are sick because of lust, anger, greed, envy, pride and illusion. And those who are free from these contaminations and those who know how to pray for others, they can offer the best help. So, Rishaya Kshina Kalmashaha, those rishis, those who are internally active, and Kshina Kalmashaha, those who are free from contaminations, they are the people who can help others. So that is the, in a sense, the qualification for helping others. Otherwise, we certainly, that doesn't mean that everybody else is banned from helping others. Everybody, those who are concerned enough, noble enough, compassionate enough to want to help others, they will naturally do what they can to help others. And that that tendency of being concerned about others with some level of selflessness is to be appreciated. At the same time, their help is not going to be complete, it's not going to be holistic, it's not going to be sustainable. Because as long as we only help at the level of the body, we can't really help. The anarthas are present, anarthas are misleading and degrading and hurting people because they are directing this consciousness away from spiritual reality where lasting happiness exists. So people have to be helped, people have to be guided to redirect their consciousness to higher spiritual reality. When their consciousness gets redirected over there, then they will become freed from their infatuation with worldly things. And then they will be able to do good to others and they will be able to receive good from others. Sarva bhuta hi deva. That's why Rishaya Kshina Kalmasha. It's important that we capable of they be pure, then they can help. That's what Prabhupada writes. A person engaged only in ministering to the physical welfare of human body cannot factually help anyone. Just as a person who doesn't know how to treat a patient cannot really help. Maybe some encouragement can be given, but as far as relieving the disease is concerned, it cannot be helped. So the real cause of one's difficulties in the hard struggle for life may be found in one's forgetfulness of his relationship with the Supreme Lord. So it is this forgetfulness that needs to be removed, and that is what the Rishi does. So now Krishna talks about how such a person will eventually attain liberation. Kama krodha vimuktanam yatinam yada chetasam abhito brahma nirvanam vartate vidatmanam. So Krishna is repeatedly using the word brahma nirvana over here. So spiritual liberation. So what are the required for that? Kama krodha vimuktanam. One is freed from kama and krodha. Vimuktanam. Mukta is liberated. Vimukta is thoroughly liberated. So kama krodha, where are these coming from? These two, actually, we discussed earlier how kama and krodha are what Krishna talks about as the inner enemies in 3.37. When Arjuna asks in 3.36, what is it that impels us to do wrong things? Then Krishna replies, kamesha krodhesha. So kama and krodha were coupled together at that time. Of course, before that also, in 2.62-63, Krishna talked about how kama, when frustrated, leads to krodha. Yahayato vishyan pumsa sangasteshu pijayate sangat sanjayate kama kama krodho bhijayate. So there also Krishna has talked about how they are connected. So when we have desire becomes strong, it becomes lust. When lust is obstructed or frustrated, then it becomes anger, wrath. So now Krishna has referred to these again in 5.23. In 5.22 was that understand that sense pleasure leads to misery, dukkha yonayate, therefore nateshu ramate buddha. Don't engage in the Sanskrit pleasure. But now in 5.24 he said, that was 5.22, so 5.23 said that, therefore tolerate. So what one has tolerated? Shaknuti haivaya sodhum prakshari vimokshanat kama krodhodbhavam vega. So again kama and krodha were coupled together. So this coupling of kama and krodha is important. Because many people, they are able to control kama, but then they can't control krodha. The Bhagavatam says that sometimes the jnanis, they cross over the ocean of lust, but then they fall and drown in the puddle of krodha. So now nobody will drown in the puddle. The puddle is supposed to be very small. But actually, the point is that when one controls kama, if the kama is not purified, it's just suppressed, that means there is a constant battle of wills going on. You know, I want it. No, I'll not do it. I want it. No, I won't do it. So there's a battle going on. That battle creates an inner hardness. An inner, you could say, hardness and harshness. And then, because it's also self-centered, I will do it, I will not do it. I will do it, I will not do it. So the bhaktas are focusing on Krishna. I want to love Krishna, I want to serve Krishna, I want to please Krishna. Therefore, I will do what will please him. And therefore, I won't do this. So the focus for the devotee is not on I, the focus is on Krishna. And that's why that desire to please Krishna crowds out the desire to enjoy or the desire to renounce. So if as devotees, we are motivated by the desire to renounce and not the desire to serve, then what is likely to happen is that we will be having a volcano-like eruption of anger sometime or the other. Because what will happen is, when we deny our own desires, our material desires, of course, when we deny our material desires, you know, I'm giving up this, I'm controlling myself so much, and still so many things are going wrong, still this is happening, that is happening, and at some time or the other, all that anger will, boom, explode like a volcano, and that hot lava coming out, it can break our relationships, it can break our bhakti also. So we see this in the Bhagavatam, that we see in the Vedic scriptures in general, the Bhagavatam contains references to it. We have Vishwamitra Muni, you know, when he was doing meditation, first he was tempted by Kama. And when he was tempted by Kama, so Menaka came and seduced him. And then he fell prey to her. And he again did austerity at that time, was determined, now I will not fall prey again. So then, when Rambha came along, what happened? You know, when he saw her coming, the first time when Menaka came, he was so captivated by her that he forgot who he was and what he was doing, and he just became attracted to her and started living with her and united with her. But when Rambha came, he understood what she was doing. And he understood that she has been sent by Indra and she's plotting his fall. So when she came that way, he felt a rush of wrath coming over him. And he cursed her. So, now what happened? When he did that, through that also he lost his power. So, ultimately we want to direct our emotions towards Krishna. So, Kama and Krodh both direct our emotions away from Krishna. So, there, both in that sense can be obstacles. So, now, Krodha, anger is called as Kama Anuja. So, Kama Anuja. Anuja means younger brother, like Lakshmana is called as Rama Anuja. And in the Sri Sampradaya, like Ramanujacharya is considered some kind of manifestation of Lakshmana. So, Rama Anuja, the younger brother of Ram. So, similarly, Krodha is called as Kama Anuja. That means, where Kama comes, sooner or later, Krodha will come. Krodha will come. Anuja is birth. Ja is to take birth. Anu is inferior, lower, and later. So, one who is born later, after Kama. So, in general, when one has to become spiritually advanced, one has to become free from Kama and Krodha. Kama, Krodha, Vimuktanam. If one is free only from Kama, of course, that is also a challenge. But if one is only free from Kama but not from Krodha, that means, actually, the desire is not yet getting redirected towards Krishna. The desire is simply getting redirected in the same material arena. That means what we want to do is, say this is the material level of reality, this is the spiritual level of reality. So we want to take our desire and move it from here and move it over here. So from the material level to the spiritual level. But when we don't redirect our desire towards the spiritual level, then the desire simply shifts from one material object to another material object. There are some people who want to give up alcohol addiction and they are told that, now, if you want to eat something or drink something, taste something which feels good to you, you take chocolates. This is called substitution therapy. But then those people become addicted to chocolates. Now, chocolates may not be as harmful as alcohol, but that is really no solution. It's just going from one material urge to another material urge. It may be a lesser of the two evils, but still it is an evil. So, as devotees, we don't want this kind of substitution of one material thing with another material thing. We want purification. Purification means replacement of the material with the spiritual. And this is not actually a replacement. It is a reversion. Reversion means we revert back to what we were originally. All of us are souls, and as souls, we are meant to delight in the spiritual level of reality. So we simply revert back to the spiritual level of reality by the practice of spiritual life, by purifying ourselves to sadhana bhakti. So kama krodha vimuktanam. So we become free from kama and krodha by the practice of sadhana bhakti. And then yatinam yatachetasam. Yatachetasam means yati has control over the mind. Prabhupada translates here as the mind. So chetasa as the mind. Chetasa can be consciousness, it can be the mind also. So here Krishna is telling that if we are to control kama and krodha, now kama and krodha are primarily internal. If you want to control them, it's not enough to do that externally. We have to do it internally. So I may say that I will not indulge in lust, or I will not vent out my anger. But that won't purify me. Certainly that it is good to at least control oneself at a physical level. But beyond that, we have to remove the anarthas even from the mental level. Because as long as they are at the mental level, they will be prodding us, pushing us, goading us, punching us, pinching us. In various ways, they will be tormenting us to act it out at the physical level also. Therefore, kama krodha vituna yatinam yatachetasam. Yatachetasam is one who is controlling the mind. And that's why it's so important for us to remember Krishna. When we remember Krishna, then we redirect our heart's desires from the material to the spiritual. Then, abhito brahma nirvanam. Abhito means assured in the near future. In the near future. This is okay, another time in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna is talking about soon, not after very far. In the fourth chapter, he has talked about this. In 4.39, he says, jnanam labdhva param shantim achirena adhigachyati. So there, achirena. Achirena means not after a long time, soon. So similarly, abhito. Prabhupada translated abhute was in the near future. Abhito brahma nirvanam. In the spiritual realm, one will attain liberation. Now, we may wonder why is Krishna not referring to maham so much over here. He does refer to it, but not so much. Because right now, he is not talking about bhakti yoga directly. He is building the Bhagavad Gita's thought flow towards bhakti yoga. Now, of course, all these verses, their principles can be applied even in the path of bhakti yoga. But these are generic spiritual principles. That means understanding that we should not pursue outer pleasures and we should pursue inner pleasures. These are generic principles we apply to karma yogis, jnana yogis and bhakti yogis. The means by which one will try sense control, that will be different. So we are talking about controlling the senses from the bhakti perspective, you know, fixing the mind in Krishna. The jnanis will talk about it from a different way. They will talk about naiti, naiti. The karma yogis will talk about it from a different way. But it's a generic spiritual principle that are being talked about. So Prabhupada says that, goes so far to say that actually, what to speak of impersonalists and mayavadis, even those who are outside the Vedic fold, like the shunyavadis, the Buddhists, and the Jains. Prabhupada does not talk so much about the Jains, but Buddhists, he says, even the shunyavadis, they all three agree that entanglement in material desires is the cause of suffering. And one has to give up that entanglement. The method of giving entanglement will be based on one's conception of the positive spiritual, of the goal. So when the goal is a positive spiritual reality, when the goal is a loving and lovable person whom we can serve, even with our senses in this world, then the process of becoming free from our material desires becomes much easier. But still, it is for us to become free. So, abhito brahma nirvanam vartate viditātmanam. So, viditātmanam. Those who are vartate means that will be there soon for them. Viditātmanam. Those who are self-realized. Atmanam. Those who have actually turned to the level of Atma. So, now Prabhupada talks about this beautiful verse of how one can become yatachetasam. So, he says, this is Bhagavatam 4.22.39. Yatpada pankaja palasya vilasa bhaktya karmashayana gratitam udgratayanti santaha tadvanna riktamatayo yatayo piruddha sruto ganastamaranam bhajivasudevam. So this is actually Prithu Maharaj. This is the Prithu Maharaj section, and he's describing over here how that absolute truth, Bhaja Vasudev, worship that absolute truth. So that the conclusion of the whole verse is Bhaja Vasudev, worship Lord Vasudev. And what is the rationale? Why should one worship Lord Vasudev? That is described prior to that. That absolute truth, that Vasudev is Yatpada Pankaja Palasha. So the lotus feet of the Lord, Pada Pankaja Palasha, Vilasa Bhaktya. So Vilasa means to delight. Once you delight in the lotus feet of the Lord, with how? Bhaktya. That means the devotee chants, dance, sings, worships the deity, hears the pastimes, and devotees to delight in that. Sometimes some devotees think that renunciation means we should not feel happiness. No. Actually, sometimes if we chant and dance, is it that we should not chant and dance for our pleasure? Well, it should not be that we should be chanting and dancing only for our pleasure. But it is not that we are not meant to feel pleasure. That means that we should chant and dance in a graceful way, not in a sensuous way, certainly not an obnoxious way. But you know, in the early days of the movement, when the devotees were in Lower East Side, at that time, the hippies would come and some of them would dance. And when they would dance in very sensuous ways, exposing their body and moving their hands and legs in a way which would be almost sexually provocative. So once one young girl was doing like that, and the devotees told Prabhupada. And Prabhupada told the Mataji, he's going to talk with that girl and to get her to dress beautifully and then dress properly. And then she came and then she again participated in the kirtan. Now she had no malintentions over there. It was just that she had taken drugs, and then she was hearing the chanting. She just went off, flipped off, was not aware of what she was doing. So that kind of dancing Prabhupada would not encourage. But certainly when we dance and sing, when we hear Krishna Katha, if we experience happiness, that is good. That's where we need to experience happiness. But the test of our devotion is that even when we don't experience happiness, we continue doing the activity. Some days when I chant, I feel it's so tiresome, it's so boring. But still I continue on. Why do I continue on? Because I know that this is the way I will experience happiness. This is the way I will make spiritual advancement. Therefore, this is what I will do. So, vilasa bhakti. But devotee should delight in the practice of bhakti. When that happens, karma shayan gratitam udgrathayanti santaha. Karma shaya. The forces of karma, the desire for fruitive activities, the residual impressions in the mind which impel us towards fruitive activity, gratitam. They are deeply bound, but udgrathayanti, they become uprooted. Santaha, the saintly people, they uproot them like that. And there is no other way to do it. What is the other way? Tadvan riktamatayo, nariktamatayo. Those who try to empty their mind. Matayo means consciousness. Riktamatayo, those who try to empty their mind. Don't think of that, don't think of that, don't think of that, don't think of that. Those who try to do that. Nariktamatayo. Yatayopi ruddha. Even if they endeavor to empty the mind, they can't do it because Sroto Ganas Tamaranam Bhajava Sudevam Sroto Ganas. Sroto refers here to waves. So, if somebody is in the coast and a person decides, you know, I want to make the coast dry, how is it possible? We may dry the coast by throwing the water back into the ocean, but just after some time, some waves will come and again the coast will become wet. Again we dry it up, again the coast will come, again the waves will come and it will make us wet. So how is it possible? Actually, if we try to empty the mind, what is going to happen is, waves are going to come, waves of sensual desires will come, either from the outside world, when we perceive sense objects, or from the inside world, that means from our own memory, when our past recollections of sensual indulgences, become aroused for some reason or the other. So they are like waves. So the waves they will keep coming and they'll keep flooding our consciousness. So the only thing to do is, so if we try to empty our mind, no, I won't think of this, I won't think of this. No, but that's what thoughts will come up, because the impressions are there, the sense objects are there externally, and the images are there internally. So therefore the solution is not to make the mind empty, but to make the mind full. It's to make the mind full with Krishna. So if I have a glass of water and I don't want water in the, if I have a glass Now, by default, the glass will be filled with air. Now, if I don't want it to be filled with air, what do I have to do? Air, go away. It's not going to work. Even if I turn the air box, glass upside down, still it will be filled with air. Then what do I do? Then I get some vacuum machine. Pull it out and make a vacuum inside the glass. But how long can I keep the vacuum? Now, as soon as I give a little exposure to that vacuum will get filled and air will come inside. So, it's practically impossible to make the glass empty into a total vacuum. Rikt, like that, it's impossible to make our mind empty. Rikta matayo is impossible. So, what is to be done? I should fill the glass with water. If I fill the glass with water, once it's filled, then there's no room for air to come inside. So, like that, if I don't want sensual desires to come in my mind, rather than trying to pull out the sensual desires, I fill my mind with devotional desires, with devotional impressions, with devotional thoughts. Fill my mind with Krishna. Then there will be no room left. So, Prabhupada had once gone for a Delhi Pandal program. Thousands of people had come for the program. As he was returning back, several of his disciples, Sasurup Mahaji and others were there. And when Prabhupada would enter, all the people would offer him obeisances. When he would leave, people would offer him obeisances. People were rushing to touch his feet. So Prabhupada asked the disciples, you know why they are all offering respects to me? The disciples did not reply anything. They said, because I am free from sex desire. Because I am free from lust. And then the devotees were stunned to hear this. And Prabhupada said, not that I have no lust. And Prabhupada realized that this is such a level that the disciples can, it's far, far away for disciples. Not that I have no lust, but Prabhupada said, I have no time for lust. I have no time for lust. So that is what each of us can aspire for. And no lust will take a long time, but no time for lust is possible for us. If we busy ourselves in devotional service to Krishna, there are so many fulfilling activities that we can do. And when we start engaging in those activities, then this constant craving that is there, it will just go in the background. And it will stay in background, and eventually it will go out of the ground only. So it will go out gradually. It may take a long time, but we can keep it in the background. There's no need to let it come in the foreground. So if we keep thinking about it, sometimes thinking too much that I will not do it makes us do it. Because even when I'll not do it. What am I? I'm thinking about it. I'm not thinking about Krishna. So when I'm thinking about something, even negative way, that I shouldn't do it. But what is happening? My thoughts are going toward that. And that contemplation may kindle my desires, even against my will. It's by the force of the mind's obstinacy. So therefore, yatpada pankaja palasya vilasa bhaktya. We should delight in Krishna consciousness. When we delight in Krishna consciousness, then whatever is being talked about over here in this section, that we'll be able to apply. And then Prabhupada quotes another verse over here. He says that, so now in the previous verse, Prabhupada said that how one should delight in bhakti. And now what will happen by delighting in bhakti, delighting in meditation Supreme Lord? That is an example over here. So, darshan dhyana samsparshai matsya kurma vihangamaha. Swanya apatyani pushnanti tathaham api padmaja. So by vision, by meditation and by touch only do the fish, the tortoise and the birds maintain their offsprings. So this is the Vedic understanding. Now we know that the birds, they sit on their hens, on their eggs, and by they keep it warm and comfortable, and gradually they, by sitting on the eggs, the birds hatch the eggs and the birdlets come out of them. So the birds nourish their offsprings just by touch. Similarly, it is said that the fish look upon their offspring and the tortoise do meditation. Now actually, looking at meditation is something which is not really observable. How can science know whom someone is meditating on? And there may be specific kinds of fish and tortoise which do this. So even if today's scientific evidence doesn't support this idea, it doesn't mean in principle it is impossible. There are certain kinds of living beings which may be capable of doing these things. So just like when we say a swan is able to separate milk from water. Now, is it that all the birds that are called swans today are able to do that? Not necessarily. Just like we have lotuses. Now, not all lotuses are as fragrant as they are talked about in the Vedic scriptures. Why? Because there are different kinds of lotuses. There can be different kinds of swans. There are different kinds of fish. There are different kinds of tortoises also. So here Krishna is talking about a special kind of fish, tortoise. So the point is, when these kind of examples are given, you know, the important is not on the factuality of the specific example. It is on the principle that is being taught through that example. So, because the factuality is dependent on our relative perception, and what we may consider counterfactual today, maybe just because of our limited perception, and how much can we actually observe? So we should not focus, whenever such examples come up, we should look at the principle. The principle is what? Principle is something is growing. So that the offspring is growing because of the benevolent care of the parent. So similarly, here the Lord is telling that similarly do I also. So here what is the point? That just as we are meditating on the Lord is also meditating on us. The Lord is actually always there with us in our heart, and is always thinking of our welfare. But when we don't think of Him, we don't allow Him to act much for our welfare. It's like a doctor wants to treat a patient, but the patient doesn't want to be treated. The doctor really can't do much. The doctor needs the patient's cooperation. So when we start thinking of Krishna, we start cooperating. And then Krishna is able to help us more and more. So we have to understand that when we are practicing spiritual life, it is not that we alone are struggling to fix the mind on Krishna. Actually, Krishna is also striving to help us fix our mind on Him. And He is helping us to move closer to Him that way. So this is Prabhupada's explanation of how Brahma Nirvana takes place. Brahma Nirvana means Brahma is Krishna, and Nirvana means liberation from material existence. So we fix the mind on Krishna. Now, here Krishna in the next two verses will give a brief explanation of how one can attain liberation by the practice of Ashtang Yoga. So now let's try to understand the chapter overview first, to understand what is happening. In Arjuna's mind there were two options, Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. Actually in his mind there are only two options, action and renunciation. So Krishna has told him about how there can be action in renunciation. The two don't have to be opposite. The two can be integrated. They don't have to be fragmented. So when Krishna explains that, how it can be fragmented, how it can be integrated, then the question comes up, is it that action alone will ultimately lead to liberation? So Karma Yoga alone, can it lead to liberation? Yes, it can. Karma Yoga, so that means when a person is practicing Karma Yoga, eventually the person can renounce the world and go to the forest. Just like a person, when the person is a Grihastha, the person lives in the world and acts in Karma Yoga. But later on, when the person takes Vanaprastha and Sanya, that person at that time may not be acting in Karma Yoga. That time the person may take up Jnana Yoga, the person may take up Ashtanga Yoga, that person may take on full-time Bhakti Yoga also. So, that can vary. So then Krishna, the way Krishna has spoken, Krishna says, Karmanai Mahi Samsiddhi, says, by work alone one can attain liberation. That means one can stay in a liberated state even while practicing one's work. But eventually, as the Varanashram progression is there, one will renounce the world. So when one renounces the world, what should one do at that time? To complete the process towards liberation, then Krishna is telling over here, instead of Jnana Yoga, Krishna has already told, that is Yoga Yukta, Ayogata, Dukkham Aptama Yogata. Krishna has said that actually if one is not practicing Karma, one will get Dukkha. So Krishna says if one wants to practice liberation, then one can practice Ashtanga Yoga. So he will describe Ashtanga Yoga in two verses over here, and this will be elaborated in the sixth chapter. The sixth chapter is among the longer chapters of the Gita, 47 verses. And there he will talk about the principle of how to renounce the world through Ashtanga Yoga. And then in the last verse of this chapter, 29th verse, Krishna will talk about Bhakti Yoga. And when he talks about Bhakti Yoga, that will be elaborated in the next section of the Bhagavad Gita, that is chapters 7 to 12. This is the progression. So in the first five chapters, Krishna has established that for Arjuna, action is better than renunciation. Karma Yoga is better than Jnana Yoga. And when he does Karma Yoga, eventually when he wants to renounce the world, at that time he can either practice Ashtanga Yoga or he can practice Bhakti Yoga. And Bhakti Yoga can be continuously practiced. One doesn't have to change the process. That he will talk about elaborately in the later chapter 7 to 12. So now let us look at the brief glimpse of Jnana Yoga, that of Ashtanga Yoga that Krishna gives over here. Sparshan krutva bahir bahyams chakshushchaivantare bhruvo pranapanam samau krutva nasa abhyantare charinam. यतेन्द्रिय मनो बुद्धिर् मुनिर् मोक्ष परायणः विगते इच्छा भय क्रोधो यः सदा मुक्त एव सः. सो फर्स्ट कृष्ण सेज दैट बहिर् बाह्यं स्किप आउटसाइड व्हाट शुड वन कीप आउटसाइड स्पर्शान कृत्वा. सो स्पर्श रिप्रेजेंट्स ऑब्जेक्ट सच एज साउंड. सो स्पर्शान कृत्वा सो स्पर्श हियर नॉर्मली वी मे से स्पर्श रेफर्स टू टच. Yes, but sparsha refers in general to the contact of senses with the sense objects. Krishna has used that in the word sparsha in a general sense in 5.22. Yehi sam sparsha ja bhoga. So same point, same usage Krishna continues. Sparshan tutva bahir bahayam. So keep external sense objects external. Don't focus on them. Chakshush chaiva antare bhruvo. So what should one do with the eyes? The eyes antare bhruvo. Fix the eyes in the middle of the two eyebrows. Krishna is talking about here practicing the process of Ashtanga yogasanas where one is doing pratyahar, shutting out the sense objects, and then pranapana samo krutvaha. So regulate the breath. Nasa abhyantara charinam. So these first verse 27th talks about the physical control that one should do at the physical level. What all one should do: regulate the breath, turn away from the sense objects, fix the eyes in between the two eyebrows. Then, in the next line, he will talk about what we should do internally. Yateindriya mano buddhir. So, bring the senses, the mind and the intelligence under control. Yata. Then, munir moksha parayanaha. And that person should be moksha parayana. Focused on attaining liberation. Understanding that nothing in this material world that can make me happy. I want to go beyond this material. Moksha parayanaha. So, munir moksha parayanaha. And then after that, vigat echa bhaya krodho. Which a person becomes free from Ichha, Bhaya and Krodha. Now Krishna has talked about Ichha and Krodha earlier. So, where is Bhaya coming in now? So, Ichha can be say equated with Kama. So, Kama, Krodha, Vimuktanam, Krishna had talked about in previous 5.26. And we discussed their coupling elaborately. Now, where is Bhaya coming from? Actually, Bhaya is a component which these three Krishna talks about regularly. He has talked about it in Vitaraga Bhaya Krodha twice, once in 4.10 when he is talking about how the three obstacles to taking surrender of him. Vitaraga Bhaya Krodha Manmaya Maam Upashritaha, he is talked about in 4.10, and then before that talk he has talked about it in the second chapter also in 2.56 when he has said that Vitaraga Bhaya Krodha Siddhir Muniruchyate Dukkheshu Dignamana Sukheshu Gatasbhuha. So, these three are together, Raga, Bhaya and Krodha. So, Raga refers to attachment. Oh, I want to enjoy this world. Krodha refers to, why can't I enjoy this world? Who can stop me? I'll get over the obstacles. Bhaya is, I don't know what is there in the spiritual realm. I don't want to explore this. Let me stay where I am. So, these are all obstacles. So, Vigat Ichha Bhaya Krodha. So, one should not have desire for this world. One should not be frustrated with this world in a pent up, resentful, angry sense. You know, if somebody renounces out of hatred for this world, that aversion will also keep one's thought fixed on the world. You know, if somebody wants to renounce, the renunciation should be not because of frustration for the world, it should be because of attraction for the other world. If it is based only on frustration to this world, then that cannot be sustained. To be sustained, it has to be based on attraction to the next world. So that's why one has to become free from krodha also. And then Gat Ichha Bhaya Krodha. And Bhaya is, oh, I don't know if there are relationships and there can be complexities in the relationships. I don't want to get into this business. Let me just stay out of this whole thing. Let me submerge into some void or something like that. Gat Ichha Bhaya Krodha. All these misconceptions, when one is free from, and Krishna doesn't say such a person will become liberated. Krishna makes an even a surprising declaration. He says, Yaha Sada Mukta Eva Saha. Yaha Sada. Such a person is always liberated. Or Yahasada, one who is in this stage, is always already liberated. Yahasada Mukta Eva Saha. So Krishna is telling about, once one goes into the Pratyahara stage, we'll discuss about the 8 stages in the next chapter, but once one shuts out the external sense objects and fixes the mind in the words, then after that, if one is free from the anarthas, then one is as good as liberated here itself. And then Prabhupada talks about keeping the eyes open and not closing the eyes because one may just fall asleep. And then Prabhupada said this will be thoroughly explained in the next chapter. And then so Prabhupada also makes it clear that Krishna consciousness is better than Ashtanga Yoga. So let's look at the last chapter, last verse of this chapter, which is an oft quoted verse again. Okta Ram Yagya Tapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Surudam Sarva Bhutanam Gyatvamam Shanti Mrichati Shanti Mrichati. Is a person who will attain peace. Who will attain peace? The person who understands that Krishna Bhukta Ramya Gitasam. He is the enjoyer of all sacrifice and austerities. He is Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, he is the proprietor of everything. And Surudam Sarvabhutanam. He is the well-wisher of all living beings. Such a person will attain liberation. So now, such a person will attain peace. Now, Prabhupada had made pamphlets of the peace formula using this, and he would distribute that. He said, this is the peace formula. What is the peace formula? To accept Krishna as the proprietor, as the enjoyer, and as the well-wisher. So now we wonder, what has this got to do with anything? How can accepting Krishna as the enjoyer, people think generally if we have to gain peace, then we have to do some negotiations. Okay, there are these two countries fighting, so then a peace conference has to be there, and some amicable settlement has to be there, and the grievances have to be redressed. So this is important, no doubt, at a material level. But at the material level, peace will always be elusive. It will always be unstable. Because there will be always people who are exploitative. So real peace will have to grow from within the hearts of people. When people are internally peaceful, then they can radiate peace outwards. And how can people become internally peaceful? When they can become internally satisfied. As long as people are determined or dependent on external satisfaction, till that time, they cannot have peace if their external situations are disrupted. And those external situations are bound to be disrupted because the externals are unstable. So here Krishna is talking about inner peace as the only sustainable building block for outer peace. So now, let us first look at what this verse means when Krishna is saying these three components. Then we will discuss about how Krishna can liberate us from how this understanding can liberate us from material existence. So actually speaking, Shantim Richati. So what we have to do is, before we can have peace with in the world, we have to make peace with God. What does it mean to make peace with God? You say, who is fighting with God? You know, God is not involved in the fighting. Some people may say that, I am not fighting with God. Who is fighting with God? But actually, we are. When we want to enjoy separate from Krishna, in a sense, we are waging war against Krishna. We want to enjoy separate from Him. And that is unfortunate. So, we may not consciously be hostile towards Krishna, but subconsciously we are, in a way, trying to usurp His position. He is the supreme enjoyer. And we are meant to be co-enjoyers with Him. We are not meant to be independent enjoyers. When we try to be independent enjoyers, we become, our enjoyment becomes limited by the finitude, by the limitedness of our capacity to enjoy. Whereas, when we connect with Krishna, then our enjoyment becomes unlimited. Because He is unlimited, His capacity to enjoy is unlimited. And our capacity, our enjoyment becomes connected with His enjoyment. So therefore, we have to make peace with God. So this verse is a call for making peace with God. And when we make peace with God, what happens exactly? Then peace comes within the heart. And when peace comes within the heart, then we can have peace in the outer world. So, actually speaking, whenever we make some plan, I want to do like this, and when it doesn't work out, then we feel so much resentment. Why didn't it work out? Why didn't it work out? That resentment can go in three directions. You know, either it can go towards others. Why did they come in my way? Why did that person do like that? Because of that person I got. And when it goes outwards, then what happens is we become hateful. We become vengeful. And we may or may not hurt that person, but that hatefulness, that vengefulness, vengeful means revengeful. So that vengefulness hurts us, definitely. Or that resentment can go inwards and we start blaming ourselves. I bungle up everything. I can never do anything well. I'm useless. People develop inferiority complex. People develop depression. People develop suicidal urges also. So that resentment can go outwards, it can go inwards, or it can go upwards. Upwards, why does God do things like this? Why does God do like that? Why does God do like that? No, why? So, in all, now when we, that resentment becomes like a wall between us and God. And when God wants to help us, we can't accept His help. Because if we are resenting somebody, how can we take the help of that person? That resentment becomes a wall between us and God, and we can't take His help. So that's why when we want help, what do we have to do? When we all need help in this world sends such obstacles and reversals in our path that we all need help. So that help comes through knowledge and faith. So we understand that Krishna is always my well-wisher, and whatever He is doing is ultimately for my good. So I may not understand it immediately. So the patient may not understand how a surgeon's knife is doing good. The surgeon's knife seems to be doing pain only, causing pain only. Same way, we may not understand immediately. But over a period of time, we will understand. So we have to be patient. We have to be faithful. But that is Suhrudam Sarvabhutanam. So when we find we want to be the Bhokta, and we find that we are not able to be the Bhokta, we make certain plans and think, I will enjoy this one. We are not able to enjoy that. Then we want to have this. For enjoying, we won't need things. I want to enjoy, then I need property, I need money, I need possessions. So sometimes our possessions are taken away, or the position that we want, we don't get them. Then that resentment comes up, but we understand that actually Suhrudam, Krishna is the well-wisher of all living beings. When we understand that Krishna is the well-wisher of all living beings, then He's my well-wisher also, He's the other's well-wisher also. So then that resentment comes down. That resentment starts breaking down. Whatever Krishna has done is for my good. Let me see how best I can continue on acting in this world. So when we have that attitude of trying to act in the best possible way, then we become purified by that. And when we become purified of the resentment by that, then more and more the way becomes clear, and the peace becomes deeper and deeper. So whichever way our resentment may go, we have to understand that resentment is never a positive emotion. Therefore, we should send resentment on the retirement. Nothing doing. I'm not going to be resentful. It's happened. What's happened has happened. What can't be changed, can't be changed. What's gone wrong has gone wrong. But the present is still there with me. And I can change the present. So let me do what I can in the best way possible now. And for that, Krishna is there to guide me. Krishna is there to help me. He's there to empower me. So that way, we move forward in our spiritual life. So this faith, Suhrudam Sarvabhutanam, can free us from enormous mental resentment. You know, when we accept in principle, Krishna is my well-wisher. Even if I don't understand how right now, Krishna is my well-wisher. That accepting that fact, once we know that, and this is not just something which you have to accept on faith. Actually, if we choose to act accordingly, we will find out in our own lives. Things which seem to be terribly wrong, over a period of time, we'll see how they actually work for our good, how they made things better for us. Suhrudam Sarvabhutanam. He is the well-wisher of all living beings. So then when we understand that He is the well-wisher of all living beings, then we will not become unduly possessive. I want this, I want that, I want that. And when people are possessive, then because people are excessively possessive, that's why conflicts come up. You know, most of the wars take place over wealth, over property, over power. And that involves, all of it involves possessiveness. So people want to be possessive. Hitler wanted to be the emperor of the whole world, at least of Europe. And later on he wanted to conquer Russia and Asia also. So his idea was that he had that possessive mentality. So he was thinking that I want to be Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. I want to be the Ishwar, the Maheshwar, the controller of all people, all living beings. All places, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. So that was, in a tiny way, that was his desire. And that's what the desires of those who want to wage wars and conquer generally is. So therefore, when we understand that Krishna is my well-wisher and all that I need for my happiness is serve Him, I don't need to assert Krishna's position and try to become Sarva Loka Maheshwara. And I don't have to become a bhokta independently. If I just become a sevak, then that will give me enjoyment in its own way. That will give me satisfaction, far deeper satisfaction than what I can get as a bhokta. When we understand this, then we will become peaceful. Shanti Mrityati. So the shanti here Krishna is talking about is not necessarily the shanti that comes from absence of war in the outer world. War in the outer world will continue. But the war in the inner world is largely fueled by resentment towards things and people and ultimately towards God. So that resentment can be sent to retirement by the knowledge that Krishna is the well-wisher and I just need to serve Krishna. Then that will shanti brichati. Now this verse is actually a conclusion of the other verses in the sense that this verse is talking about the unity, how Krishna is the ultimate goal of various paths. So, bhokta aram yajna. So, when Krishna is saying that, I am the bhokta of all the yajnas. So, the yajnas are performed by those people who are practicing karma yoga and those who are practicing karma kanda. We discussed this about yajna elaborately in the third chapter. So, that they do yajna. So, that means Krishna is telling, revealing over here that I am the goal of all those people who practice karma yoga and karma kanda. And bhokta aram tapasam. Tapasas are generally performed by the jnanis. They do some austerities to try to become detached from this world. So, Krishna is saying, I am the goal of the jnana yogis also. Now, sarvaloka maheshwaram. So, some of the worshippers, some of the demigod worshippers, they aspire to go to the planets of the demigods because they think that those are their worshipable deities and they want to be with them. And they think that will make us happy. Now, Krishna talks about Yanta Deva Vrata Devan. He talks about that in 9.25. So, here he is saying that, actually, even the lokas and the devatas are Maya lokas only. They are secondary proprietors. I am the ultimate proprietor. Therefore, the implication is, come back to me. And then, Suhridam refers to, it is the goal of Ashtanga Yoga. The Ashtanga Yogis, they want to turn inwards and meditate on the absolute truth. They want to, Dhyana vastita tadgatena manasa pashyantiyam yogino. Dhyana avasthita. They want to become situated in dhyana and they want to turn inwards and fix their consciousness on the Supreme Lord. Katadgatena manasa pashyanti. They want to perceive inwards the Super Soul. So basically that Lord whom they want to perceive in the heart, I am that Lord. I am the Suhridam. So Suhridam can mean well-wisher. It can also mean one who is situated in the heart. So, the well-wisher is situated in the heart, but Krishna is also talking about the fact that he is factually situated in the heart. He is present as a super soul in the heart. So that is what is being pointed to over here. And in that way, we can say that this verse also refers to him being the goal of the Ashtanga Yogis. And then, Sarva Bhutana. That means that ultimately he is the goal of all living beings. Mama Vartamanu Vartante Manushya Partha Sarvasya. Krishna is saying in 4.11 that all people are on my path. That point is being reiterated over here. He is the goal of all living beings. In this way, in this verse, Krishna is in a succinct way, in a indicative way, telling that he is the goal of all paths. And Prabhupada's purport over here, it's a long and classic purport. And so Prabhupada says, the bare facts of life, or bare facts means, they are not adorned facts, no varnishing, there is no decoration, just simple facts. What are these facts? The Lord is the master of material nature and the conditioned souls are under the stringent rules of material nature. Unless one understands these bare facts, it is not possible to achieve peace in this world individually or collectively. This is the sense of Krishna consciousness. Lord Krishna is the supreme predominator and all living entities, including the sacred demigods, are his subordinates. So sense of Krishna consciousness means overall Krishna consciousness, not just activities. I chant Hare Krishna, I study the Bhagavad Gita, I associate with devotees, they are all important. But the sense of Krishna consciousness is, Krishna is the master and I am his servant. That is the sense which we should have. And that sense will actually enable us to move forward in spiritual life. And then, Prabhupada says, now this is a very interesting statement. Krishna consciousness, however, it brings one into spiritual life even while one is within the jurisdiction of matter. For it is an arousing of spiritual existence by practice in the material world. So by practice in the material world. So that means, normally in the path of Jnana Yoga, there are two distinct steps. First is one is practicing, one is acting in the world, then one disconnects oneself from the world so that one can become connected to the spiritual reality. But in the path of Bhakti Yoga, one may stay in the world, but one invokes the spiritual reality by a devotional intention. So it is arousing of spiritual existence even while we are in the material world. And that's what makes it so exciting, that we don't have to give up the material world entirely for the sake of attaining the spiritual world. We can be in this world, but we can act in a regulated way, in a devotional way, detailed way. And then Prabhupada writes, there are various paths. He says that there is a gradual process of elevation in the practice of the eight. Now he talks about aisyas. But these only preface perfection by devotional service, which alone can award peace to the human being. It is the highest perfection of life. So ultimately, after the Ashtanga Yoga process, one comes to Samadhi. And in Samadhi, one becomes Krishna conscious, because at that time one becomes conscious of Krishna. And that is what is the ultimate goal. So if somebody starts practicing Krishna consciousness in an alternative way, without going through the other processes, the whole process of Ashtanga Yoga, then that person can more easily achieve the same perfection. So these only preface. So they just come before, and the real thing is Krishna consciousness. So in this way, Krishna in this chapter has talked about three things. First is, the first section, verses 1 to 6, he has said that Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga will lead to the same result, but Karma Yoga is easier. Then in the remaining chapter, he has explained how Karma Yoga will lead to liberation. So first, verses 7 to 16, he has stated that by knowing Atma and understanding oneself to be the Atma, one can stay free from bondage. And from 17 to 29, by fixing the mind on the Paramatma, one can attain liberation. So in this way, Krishna has told that, Arjuna, you should practice Karma Yoga. Have no doubts that by acting in the world, you can attain liberation. So now Krishna, in the next chapter, will describe how and when one eventually has to renounce, what should one do when renounce at that time. That we will discuss in our next class. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.